Hello, hello, and welcome to Advanced Living. My name is Ken Lesser, and your host on this wonderful program to give you an opportunity to make discoveries in better living of a whole range of ways of things to bring better health, better awareness to your lives, with the net result of increasing quality of life and reducing stress. One of the things today that I'm so privileged, we know over the years that the political process hasn't upheld some of the high standards that were there at the very beginnings of our country when it was founded. And yet, in our hearts, we've yearned for something better, and we know that it could be done. Today, my beloved listeners, I am so honored to bring to you the two key individuals who helped Governor Bill Ritter and his campaign that successfully put him in as a governor-elect for the state of Colorado. And they have some wonderful things to share, not only about how they were able to accomplish a wonderful campaign with some very unique features to it, but to give us a chance to take a deep breath and notice and be inspired that there is a way with high integrity to succeed in politics, and that there is a path that others can follow, and there is reason for us to rejoice and to become more involved in the political process. Without further ado, I'm so delighted to introduce you to Greg Kolomitz and Sheila McDonald. Greg and Sheila, hello, hello.
Hello, and thanks for the opportunity to be here.
Oh, you're welcome. It's a pleasure. Now, from what you were sharing when we conversed, I guess you and Sheila have both been involved in political campaigns for 20-plus years, so you've got quite a bit of experience behind you.
We do that. At least, we've been on lots of campaigns individually, and we've had the pleasure of working on many campaigns together, so we've done this before.
Oh, good. Well, what I'm curious, what can you share in terms of what made this campaign different?
Well, I think, Ken, one of the things is we really had a terrific candidate, and just from a campaign perspective, our candidate, he just was a gift. He had such a positive outlook to begin with, and such a positive vision of where the state could be, and I think one of his goals in communicating that message is to always tell people what you're for and how you're going to help them make things better in their life and how you connect with them on their journey versus telling them everything that's wrong or telling them everything that's wrong with the other candidate. So that is one of the very first things we started with. And really, from a campaign worker's, staff person's perspective, you just can't beat that.
No. Boy, that's great. And in modern politics, to have that kind of focus, that's kind of unique.
It is unique, and I think that we had the courage to as Greg always says, let Bill be Bill, and we didn't try to change him or we never had to say, here's what you think about this issue or that issue. He already had a vision, and we just organized behind him, and I think it really showed that people want somebody to tell them what they think. They want an elected official to tell them what they think. They may not agree with them all the time, but they appreciate someone who talks straight, and we had that. And so we just, as staff people, organized behind the candidate and helped him get his message out. But we really had a terrific candidate to start with.
Ah, wow. Well, that's great. Anything in that arena that jumps out at you, Greg?
No, I think Sheila, described it very well. I think that, I think the one thing is that, I think that Bill Ritter had an idea Bill Ritter knew why he was running for governor and knew what he wanted to do as governor. And I think that many times in campaigns and in politics, people that run for office may know what they're doing or why they want to do it, but sometimes I think their staff may get in the way of that and try to overhandle them or make them somebody that they're not. And as Sheila described, when we started this journey about a year ago this time, one of the things that was a key component of what we wanted to do was, you know, let Bill be Bill and not get in the way of him. And at the end of the day, I mean, that's what these campaigns are about the candidate and about people. And we thought at the very beginning that one of our strongest assets was our candidate. And so it was, you know, as Sheila said, it was just one of our goals not to get in the way of our candidate.
Yeah. Wow. Well, that's to me so very important to, when you have a beginning point of an individual that has a clear idea of who they are and what they want to do.
That's right. Absolutely.
And I guess, and he'd been apparently demonstrating this for a while in his career.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, his career has certainly been marked by, you know, a desire to serve and a desire to try to help people. And I think fundamentally and at the bottom line, that's why, you know, he decided he wanted to run for governor. But I think he also, you know, he wants to make a positive difference for people's lives.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's huge to have someone that's well grounded in that, and then I guess a strong family man, from what I understand.
He has a great family. He has a great wife. His kids are great, and it's amazing. His brothers and sisters were all incredibly supportive during this whole process, and they came on, you know, when he traveled around the state on the weekends, often they would come on trips with him. When we did our bus tour at the end of the campaign, we did a statewide tour on a big Ritter bus, and most of the time it was filled with his family. And so I think that certainly grounds him, and it helps him define and develop his message as he's talking to other folks, because where he's coming from is where most folks are. You know, they're just working. They want a good education for their family. They want affordable health care. You know, those are issues that he knows a lot about. He worries about those things himself, but also his family worries about those things. And they, you know, they cover the economic spectrum. And so he has a very good understanding of where people are and the ability to listen to people and where they are and what they need help with.
I mean, just to sort of expand a little bit with what Sheila was saying, I completely agree. But, I mean, it was amazing to watch. I mean, running for office is a taxing endeavor on one. But he clearly got energy and comfort from his family. And, I mean, it was, you know, it didn't take very long to figure out that, you know, he would be happiest when he was surrounded by either, you know, his kids or with his wife or certainly with his brothers and sisters. And it was quite an amazing thing to see, and certainly to see how that very large family all worked together and supported one another.
Well, I'm wondering, when I had a chance to attend that staff meeting on November 9th, there was certainly a wonderful positive energy in that. And I wasn't participating in the entire campaign like many of the people there, so I'm kind of wondering, from your perspective, what did you do that was different? And I didn't know if maybe some of the background of the Ritter family was a positive contribution to helping with cohesion of the staff, or you know what. Tell me a little bit more about that.
I'll tell you, Greg from the get-go, and I joined the Ritter campaign at the end of March, but Greg has been there, you know, since last January, and he from the beginning had this vision of how you run a campaign and where you put resources. And a lot of times in a campaign, you know, there's limited resources due to campaign finance laws, and a lot of it has to go into the paid media, the TV, the radio, et cetera. But Greg really made a commitment from the beginning that we would have a strong field program, and that would include organizing people at the grassroots level, not just sort of doing it, but really making a financial commitment to that, canvassing door-to-door, phone banking, really putting some emphasis and focus on our volunteer coordination programming. We had 2 volunteer coordinators. That's pretty rare in any campaign, even a statewide campaign. We had an extensive group of interns that came and joined the campaign. I mean, during the summer, we probably had 30 young people on any given day in there working, and we charged them with significant responsibilities. It wasn't enough to just show up and kind of stuff envelopes or sort things. They really, you know, they were in charge of counties. They were in charge of calling people. They were in charge of constituency groups. And so I'd say that's the first thing. The commitment to that field organization made it a lot different, and it offered the opportunity for a lot of different people to become involved in the political process at some level. And once people kind of got in and they heard and they discovered that their ideas were being listened to, that they could execute some of their ideas, and that they could really be involved in a significant way, and that really the reflection of Bill Ritter, that was a reflection of his philosophy as well, then it kind of took on a whole momentum of its own, and it generated more people. And so we kind of had this powerful organization across the state of volunteers and activists and people who had never been involved in politics who felt like they could really make a difference in this election. And really that comes from the campaign manager. It certainly comes from the candidate and the tone the candidate sets, but the campaign manager has a lot of ability to set up a structure that allows for that and that provides the resources to develop that concept. And Greg really gets credit for that. He did a tremendous job in having the courage to set that up, because a lot of people don't put much stock in it, and then letting it take its course and develop a personality of its own.
Oh, wow.
Well, Sheila, just a couple to elaborate. I mean, I think we did, one of the things that we made a commitment to, as Sheila said, was this field program and this field component, and we made a commitment to that early on. We decided that was going to be a part of this campaign. The other piece is that Sheila talked a little bit about the intern program and the young people. As Sheila said also, I mean, you don't normally make as big a commitment, both from a human capital perspective and from a financial perspective, to a field operation in a campaign with limited finances. But we did that, and one of the reasons we were able to do that is because we did have such a significant intern and young persons program. And that was a much different approach than it had never been taken before in a statewide campaign. And as Sheila said, I mean, we didn't just give these interns, you know, they weren't just making copies. They were significant responsibilities, whether it was constituency groups or county coordination or trip planning. I mean, they had a significant role. And Sheila was very kind in her comments, but Sheila designed and oversaw a lot of that program, and so it was truly a team effort. But it was a commitment to do things differently, and I think the other piece of it is that not just in relationship to this part of the campaign, but I mean we really empowered all of our staff to make decisions and to do things. We empowered many of our volunteers that were out in the field and on the ground to make things happen, and it was our belief all along that you couldn't run a campaign if you didn't empower people to make decisions and do things. And so that was really an overriding philosophy through the whole course of the campaign.
Mm. Wow. So we have 2 key points, that intern program and putting human and capital resources towards a field program, which I guess in the face of needing to spend money for media, paid media, which can be expensive, but you found that really built a lot of momentum that helped you, and literally that sounds to me like the essence of what we would call a grassroots campaign.
Well, it really was. I mean, but I think it really was. And I mean, we made a commitment. I mean, you can certainly never discount the value of media in a political campaign. I mean, it's a critical component, and it always will be. But the philosophy that Sheila and I brought to this campaign is that we understand the power of the grassroots. We understand the power of people, and we made a commitment to that. And you know, I think it can serve as a valuable 1-2 punch with it. I don't think you can, can you win a campaign solely on a grassroots field program? Probably not. But it's certainly, it's our belief that you can certainly lose a campaign if you don't pay significant attention to that part of the campaign.
Right, and I'd just like to add to that. You know, normally for a Democrat in a statewide campaign, you know, Denver is your base, you got to lock in Denver by a significant number of votes, a certain number of votes, a certain percentage, and for you to be able to win the state. I mean, you saw that with Salazar, and you've seen it with other successful Democrats who have run statewide. And Greg's right, you can't do it without the media, but I think by focusing on the grassroots, you know, Bill was declared a winner before Denver's vote came in.
Wow.
And he ended up winning by such a significant, it's almost 17%. That's a very significant margin to win by if you're a Democrat in this state, just based on the sheer number of registered voters and how that breaks down by Republican, Democrat, and independent voters. And so Greg's absolutely right. You can't win it with just grassroots, but the grassroots can make a significant difference, and it also brings people into the process, and I think it helps in the long run, just because if people feel part of the process and they feel part of the solution, they're more likely to be part of the process when you're governing. And you really need people to help you. You need people to understand what your mission is and then to help you execute it in their community, so that it's not just governing from the top. It's really starting a process from the bottom, and then from the top as well, so that the two meet in the middle. And that's really how you build your local communities and your state as a community.
Mm. Okay. Yeah, so it's not only a good strategy for putting a campaign together, but doing it with bringing people back into the process of involvement in a political campaign. And the net result of that is re-energizing neighborhoods and communities.
Right.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, we did a lot of things that we certainly are very proud of in this campaign. But one of the things that I feel good about the number of people that had never been involved in politics or the process before that we're part of the Ritter campaign. We had a large number of people that played a role that had never been a part of the process, and that's not only, as we've touched on, not only a good way to win a campaign, but also a good way to re-energize the process and build community.
Yeah. Wow. That's fabulous. And this was essentially the campaign that you kind of pulled these strategies together and really gave it a chance to shine for all its potential.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I don't know if people fully recognize this was a different strategy. It was a different strategy. It was a different way of spending the candidate's time. It was a different way of spending resources. It was a different approach, certainly one that we felt would work, and we believe it did obviously work. But it is a different approach than I think, at least in my political career, has ever been tried on a candidate campaign.
Ah, okay, and I guess this you'd have to consider this a very significant level governor of an important state.
Well, we certainly would think so, yes.
Yeah. So, and that bodes well. Well, tell me, I guess this all was taking place, too, with a time where there was a lot of people nationally disgruntled with the current presidential administration. And I wonder, what part did that play, the national democratic wave, in the campaign for you?
Oh, I think that that can't be discounted. I think people were ready for a change. And in politics, Ken, as I'm sure you know, a lot of what happens has to do with timing and the mood of the country and the mood of the state. So I think that definitely played a role. I think people were ready to get active. People have felt disenfranchised by what's going on nationally across party lines. And so there certainly is a timing aspect to it, and Bill certainly came around at the right time. And so that certainly, that plays a role, and you could see it all over the country. People are ready for a change. I think, you know, Colorado voters operate a little bit differently. They're happy to split their ticket. You know, they can see there needs to be a change in Congress. But in the state, Governor Owens has a very high approval rating. So we were running against the coattails of a very popular governor, a Republican governor. And so, you know, who knows how much the national, the feeling nationally had to do with the governor's race specifically. But I think it played a probably a fairly significant role in just how people were feeling and their thirst for a message and their thirst for somebody who stands for something. And that became very clear as we were out talking to different groups. And Bill met with, you know, thousands and thousands of people. And as we were with him listening to their concerns, they want somebody who's going to stand for something. There's a thirst for real leadership out there. And I think that that's a piece that we were able to take advantage of as well, because we had a candidate who is a leader.
Yeah, I agree with all that. I think at the end of the day, I'm not sure. I mean, certainly the national trend had something to do with this, but I think for all those reasons that Sheila described, and I think it was the strength of our candidate. It was the strength of the message. I mean, you know, a national wave in a state like Colorado is probably good for a couple of percentage points, but I don't think you can attribute a 16-point victory over a sitting, you know, United States congressman in a state that's in the last three presidential elections have voted for the Republican. You know, I don't think you can attribute all of it to the national wave. I think a part of it, but I think it's more a testament to all the things that Sheila articulated.
Yeah, I think what you just brought up, Greg, is pretty significant, that Colorado over time, I guess, has leaned towards a Republican commitment. And then there was a governor that was very popular, Owens, and then Beaupres, am I saying it correctly?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Had won a congressional election.
Absolutely. I mean, people ask, you know, they ask us all the time, you know, is Colorado now a blue state? I don't think you can say Colorado's a blue state. I think that you can say, you know, Colorado's probably a purple state, but I think that, you know, certainly people want the things we've been talking about. People want somebody they can believe in. They want somebody that is a problem solver. They want somebody that understands what the legitimate role of government is. And, you know, as Coloradoans have demonstrated for over, you know, 125 years, you know, if that person is a Democrat, they'll vote for that person. If that person's a Republican, they'll vote for that person. So it's, I think, to say that Colorado is now a blue state is not true, and I think it also it goes to sort of a greater problem in terms of trying to oversimplify politics and how people think and feel about politics. People don't think and act in a purple way, or in a blue way or a red way. They just act in a way that affects their everyday life. And I think too often in politics, you know, things are viewed through a partisan prism.
Well, it's Abraham Lincoln many years ago, I think, was said something about a house divided against itself cannot stand. And with the emphasis that there's been on which side are you on, are you red or are you blue, that certainly speaks to me of the divisiveness versus here I'm hearing in the campaign about pulling people together and getting them involved in the process and having someone that had a clear vision and a strong stance on the issues that people could know what was going on. It wasn't about smoke and mirrors and his personality.
I think that, we ran and one of the decisions that we made is we didn't care if people were Republicans or Democrats. And we organized and we thought about it. Certainly it was a partisan race. Certainly we ran as a Democrat. But we didn't think about it in a Republican or a Democratic way. We thought about it with people. And I think that clearly, again, that is a non-traditional way of thinking about it. And in a partisan race, I think you've seen it over and over, not just in Colorado, but, across the country, things get overly partisan and you start to think about people as Republicans or Democrats as opposed to, are they educators, are they parents, are they sportsmen, what are they interested in? Most people don't wake up in the morning and worry about Republican politics and Democratic politics.
Right. Yeah, that's so important. Well, I'm curious, you were involved in the camp, both of you, for a long time. Would you, each from your own stories, perhaps share a few of those key moments?
In this campaign?
Yes.
Well, I mean, I think there were a lot of key moments, obviously, I think we had the statewide ballot initiative here in the state in 2005, referendum C and D. I think that the coalition that was put together for that campaign and the passage of that campaign, was a key moment in the 06 gubernatorial race. It was something that happened a year out. Congressman Beaupre opposed it. Governor-elect Ritter supported it, actively campaigned for it. I think that was a key moment of the campaign.
And for my listeners that may not be familiar, can you give a quick synopsis of C&D?
Well, Sheila was actually the campaign manager of that, so she could probably do a better job than I can of a synopsis. So I'll let her give that synopsis.
Referendum C actually is the one that passed. Referendum D did not. But Referendum C gave the state a five-year timeout from Tabor. And let us build our capital back up that had been taken away by the ratchet effect of Tabor. So it essentially let more money go into three areas, into education, into healthcare, and into transportation. And so the reason it was so important to these communities, it was important on the Front Range, but it was especially important into some of these rural communities, because without Referendum C, 10 of the 13 community colleges would have shut down.
Ooh.
And those community colleges are literally the economic engines of those communities, and often the only place where people can either get retraining for jobs or young people coming out of those communities can go there for 2 years and then launch into a bigger university setting. And so that message about education and healthcare, really, that year we spent on Referendum C, and it barely passed, if you remember, and D did not pass. But that year we spent traveling the state talking to people about the importance of healthcare and educating people about what the state's role is in terms of higher education really made a difference in this campaign. And not to mention, in Referendum C, we used a model of coalition building where we got groups that were affected by this money together. And so there's 1,500 groups that were supporting C. And so we had this incredible statewide coalition. and they educated their members. Those members went out and educated the public. And so when Bill, our governor-elect Ritter, was out talking to people, he wasn't having to educate them regarding the importance of higher ed money in their community. They had already been educated through last year's campaign.
Mm.
And so that in itself was very helpful because we had a starting point and we had people who had at least a base knowledge of what the state can do in terms of helping them with their higher education and helping them keep their clinics open. And that is, you know, if you live on the Front Range, you don't understand that in Trinidad, if you live in Trinidad, you have to drive an hour and a half to have a baby because the hospital there doesn't deliver babies.
Oh.
You know, it's a funding cut issue. And so we had that base to start with. And so because a Congressman Beaupre opposed referendum C and D, people understood that too. And they understood that the person running against Bill Ritter essentially was in favor of their community college shutting down or not restoring funding for a health care clinic in their community within a reasonable travel distance from them in their community. And so that was a key point for us, and we hammered away on that, and it helped us as we targeted communities around the state. And so I think I agree with Greg that was a key point in terms of where we kind of started.
You know, it's interesting because I don't think, I have a lot of respect for Congressman Beaupre and his staff in terms of, you know, anybody that participates in the process, you have to respect them and respect their participation. But I honestly believe, I don't believe that Congressman Beaupre and certainly his staff ever fully understood the impact that opposing referendum C had on him and his campaign. I remember a day or two after the 2005 election, I mean, Sheila and I were on the phone and we were talking about how we took the C model and what the results of C meant and how that would have implications on the 06 governor's race.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So you knew early on that was a significant tip.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Right. You could, I traveled the state during the referendum C campaign, and regular people who never got involved with politics, and it didn't matter what their party affiliation was, maybe they voted, but they didn't actively get involved, all of a sudden were fighting to keep their community viable because certain things were going to happen if we did not get this referendum C passed.
Mm.
And it created this whole new awareness among folks that they just didn't have before.
Wow, what a rallying point.
Mm-hmm.
And something for me, I've been kind of what I'd call a bit of a city boy for a long time, and I'm hearing that the things that I've taken for granted, easy access to different things, whether it was educational facilities or healthcare hospitals, that as we get into the rural communities, which really make up the major part of most states, that those are key issues, and that this was one of those ways that really played to make a cohesive base out in the rural community.
Right.
Right.
Wow. Wow. Well, that's great. What else from your wonderful memories did you find really significant time?
I think the other kind of commitment we made that was significant is we built the campaign around constituency groups. And so, again, when we had Bill out speaking to folks, he just didn't go and talk to Democrats. The Democrats are your base in any election. Your party is your base. But we went and talked to, nurses. If he was down in the San Luis Valley, I'd pull together a group of nurses, and that's who he would talk with. He talked with sportsmen when he was on the Western Slope. He talked about the sage-grouse. Again, it is a campaign. It was a specifically designed campaign for this candidate because we had a candidate who understood so many issues at such a deep level. And so he really needs to get the credit for that. But as we were searching and organizing around the state, we really looked for constituency groups that have specific issues. You know, healthcare obviously is an issue. The environment's an issue. Education's an issue. And so we look at those groups. And so when he went out, he spoke to teachers, but he also spoke to administrators. He spoke to parents who have kids in school. You know, that's K through 12. He went to higher ed. You know, one of our interns really did a great job and put together a college tour. You know, he's the only candidate in years who's done a college tour, where he went and spoke to, sometimes he spoke to a poli-sci class and then, you know, spoke to a larger group later. He spoke to student governments and really listened to what these folks had to say. And so we organized the state in terms of constituency groups, and we thought of them as that versus Democrat, Republican, and unaffiliated. And so the message was issue-based, not party-based.
Wow. Boy, that is unique in modern politics. People give lip service to that in the campaign, saying, yes, it's about the issues, and yet when they're actually taking action where the rubber meets the road, it tends, from what I've seen, to be more about party and loyalty and personalities.
Well, that's a traditional way of doing it, and we shook it up a little bit.
Yes, and look, that's the wonderful campaign, and I guess some of the things that were so amazing was apparently that in doing this, the effects of building community, I guess, within the staff, the way people had bonded with each other. I mean, you know much more about that because you've been more involved, but I'd like you to kind of expand on some of that, if you would.
Well, I mean, we approached this from a standpoint of, I mean, we wanted to build a staff and a cohesion on the staff, that, you know, we were all in this together, and that it was if one of us succeeded, we all succeeded. If one of us failed, we all failed. And so, you know, we really worked hard from the very beginning to sort of instill that notion into people, and that notion into the staff that, you know, when one of us succeeded, we all succeeded. When one of us failed, we all failed. And that it was, you know, we were a part of something bigger than ourselves. And there was no I in team, and we approached that way. And so, I mean, and I think we did that through a couple of things. I mean, we were very straightforward. We didn't keep a lot of secrets, as opposed to, you know, a lot of campaigns, you know, have a lot of secrets. We shared most everything, the good news and the bad news, with our staff. So we were very upfront and honest about that. You know, we fought vigorously and defended our staff against anybody that was trying to take advantage of our staff or wasn't treating staff in an appropriate manner. And it didn't matter whether you were, you know, everybody had a huge role to play, from the person answering the phone, you know, to right on up to the top. And so everybody had a role. It was a very flatline kind of organization. We demanded a lot. We worked hard. We held people accountable. But I think at the end of the day, people appreciated the amount of respect that was given to them, the amount of and the amount of responsibility. I think that was the other thing. I mean, we gave people, Sheila touched on it earlier, you know, we gave people significant responsibility. We let them do their job, and we backed them up. And I think at the end of the day, we created a very it was a good staff. It was a tight staff. Everybody worked hard. And, you know, I told the staff, I think, Ken, you were there on our last staff meeting. You know, I told them that, you know, they would forever be known as Raider staffers, and that is the case, and that's something they can always be very, very proud of.
Yeah.
I also think, too, and this, again, this comes down to just Greg's style and his ability to put together a team. We had our senior staff, which was really created the leadership component of the campaign, all got along great. Everybody was a team player, and really worked to make the team better all the time. There was never any of what I sometimes think of as kind of some typical candidate campaign activities where people are undermining each other or backbiting. We had none of that. We really had a strong senior staff. Everybody, we call it staying in your lane. Everybody stayed in their lane and did their job and helped kind of hopefully mentor the younger staff members and really pitched in. And so we really avoided a lot of the kind of backbiting that can go on a campaign, and that's really due to Greg's management style. And it was just a great staff. Ken Weil was our policy director. He is he's just a substantial human being as well as a terrific policy director. And Evan Dreyer is our communications director, and he just, you know, he just worked, and he's just a good egg and smart and thoughtful as well. And Che Lisa Hurt was our financial director, and she did a terrific job as well. So we really had this strong group of folks who worked together and actually really respected and liked each other, and it makes a huge difference on a campaign.
Yeah, I think that's I agree a lot with Sheila, and you know, the part that I just was going to follow up a little bit on was the mentoring of the young people. I mean, you know, we'll see, you know, again, you know, I told them at our final staff meeting, I mean, you know, Greg and Sheila are getting old and we don't have many more rodeos left in us. So the proof of the pudding with this approach will be, you know, if a lot of these young people and a lot of these, you know, interns, you know, continue to be involved in the process and take the values and the things that we taught them and the approaches to solving problems in politics that we implemented on this campaign. I hope that they stay involved. I hope they take it and continue to utilize it, and sort of, you know, a whole new generation of political leaders, you know, can be traced back to the Ritter campaign.
Yes. Well, I know from being around that energy, it's inspiring to me. It just harkens back to time early in our country where there were a lot of people living higher values and a bonding and a sense of community that was incredible. And I feel like we're revisiting that through your efforts and what you inspired your staff and the volunteers and so many out in the communities to pull together.
Well, we worked hard to do that. Obviously, we had a goal in mind, and we're hopeful that as we talked about, that the seeds of this will grow and be reaped for, you know, maybe 20 plus years.
Sure. Now, I'm also wondering, because you made mention there's like two key components of what you would call a field component, and then the paid media. You'd mentioned that you were willing to put a little more emphasis onto the field part of the campaign. What was your paid media strategy?
Well, I mean, we had a great paid media firm. The Gans Hamburger and Coley was the name of our media firm. They also, I think, deserve a lot of credit for not getting in the way of Bill Ritter being Bill Ritter. Many times media firms, you know, try to make the candidate into something that he's not. And I think that this case, the media really reflected Bill Ritter. And I think that that was somebody that was very straightforward. He was straightforward. He was honest. And I think that, you know, we used the paid media to talk about the things that he wanted to do and that he would do as governor.
Yeah. Okay. And so that's really key to have that level of cooperation.
Yeah, that really is. And I think if you go back and, you know, you look, there was a central part, there was a decision that we made early on and about our paid media, and it goes back to what we've talked all sort of through the whole program, and that is we felt that our strongest messenger was Bill Ritter. And so I think in every ad that we put on, There was a element of Bill Ritter talking directly to the voters of the state of Colorado, and many times that was the whole ad was Bill Ritter talking to the voters, and we thought that was kind of reflective of our candidate and kind of reflective of what made him very strong, and so we made a commitment to do that in terms of our paid media.
Ah, well, that's wonderful. Now, one of the things that I guess comes up when people think about politics is the idea of integrity, of being able to focus a campaign on a positive versus some of the attack type of ads, different things like that. And I'd like you to comment a little bit about your philosophy on that and how you were able to implement some of that in your campaign.
Well, I mean, I think the bottom line is negative ads and negative attacks are used, whether people like to admit it or not, because they work. And we certainly were punched a couple of times in this campaign, and we responded. But I think that a couple of things that made our responses different and gave us an ability to respond in the way we did. The first thing I think that we were always focused on in terms of our response to any negative attack or any point that we would make where we differ with the congressman is we always stayed very factual. We always wanted to make sure we were staying very factual and we were talking about the facts and we had easily provable and demonstrable facts. That was number one. Number two, in everything that we, this goes back to one of the points that Sheila made, and Sheila continually sort of harped on this, if you will, during the campaign, is every time we would say something that we opposed or point out a difference with the congressman, we'd always make sure we had something in there that what we were for or what Bill Ritter was for. And I think that was a critical point. And then I think the other point is that we were able to sustain some of these attacks or take some of these punches, if you will, was a direct result of how we had organized the campaign in terms of these constituency groups and the travel schedule and who we had talked to. Negative attacks work mostly when people don't have another context of the candidate or don't know the candidate or have never met the candidate. But the fact that we've traveled so extensively and we did this, we organized the campaign the way we organized it, people had their own impressions of Bill Ritter and had met Bill Ritter, and that made it more difficult, I think, for the opposition to sustain any sort of level of attack.
Mm. Wow, okay. So the candidate himself, Bill Ritter, being willing to put in extensive time in front of the people.
He was, and it was key to the campaign, and it's hard, and his schedule was brutal. It was brutal, and it was other candidates, other elected officials saw that and said, your staff is really working you, and his schedule was brutal, but to run the kind of campaign that we had mapped out. And we didn't know in advance exactly what every attack would be, but you sit down and strategize and see, where you're vulnerable, and you can anticipate some attacks. And so to be able to combat those attacks, you have to go at it from a multi-pronged level. You can't just say, okay, we'll answer with a TV ad. You have to have enough base so those ads have nowhere to land. And so if you're in Durango and Bill Ritter's been into your town three times and he's been talking about healthcare and education and you've seen him in the paper or you've gone and heard him speak or you're a teacher and you went and met with him, with 10 other teachers, and then you hear about something on the TV, they're a lot more skeptical about buying that. Mm-hmm. And so it is we just felt that it was the right way to run a campaign, and it really is the right way to run a campaign, because you should be talking to people about issues that matter to them on a day-to-day basis. And so the attacks, you know, negative campaigning works. I think Greg's right when he says, you know, our philosophy was we come back, you must respond, you can't not respond, but you do it in a factual way, and you do it in a way that does not lose you credibility with the voters, because they knew Bill Ritter, they'd seen him, they talked to him, or they'd read about him in the paper, and so we didn't want to come back with anything that wasn't any less than factual. So, and it was about maintaining credibility with the voters, and I think that, you know, based on the results, you know, that was successful.
Wow. Yes. gloriously successful.
Yes.
And as I'm listening to both of you, this beautiful feeling comes forward of the net result of this strategy is that there's a base been created of people that are now involved in the political process again, so that when Bill Ritter takes over as the governor, it's not just him having to push the ball uphill himself.
That's that is true, and that was, you know, that was part, you know, certainly part of the strategy. I mean, the strategy was built to win, but also, I mean, there was an eye to this towards, you know, obviously winning and giving the governor, you know, something to work with. And so, you know, we obviously believe he'll be up to that challenge, and we'll do a good job.
Yeah. Well, it's, you know, this to me is just astounding, because there he is, and then I guess to be able to call upon some of the coalitions that helped get him elected, and to call upon their support for different agendas that he would want to put forward, and to know that he's already got a strong base of popular support of people that are active.
Right.
Right.
I don't know. I'd call that stroke of genius. I mean, not only did it win a campaign to get a person elected, but to me, it set into place the framework for a continuity of people of past Bill Ritter being able to carry forward with this constituent base.
I think those are all very very good points.
I'm looking at what so many people yearn for, which is a turnaround in a political process from something where there's lower levels of integrity than most of us would appreciate or want, to something where there is a connection with an individual and a building of community and doing it on integrity and issues and not personalities. You've heard the term sustainable community, I'm sure.
Right.
Absolutely.
And so to me, I'm getting the sense that you've built something that would be a sustainable model in a political process.
Well, obviously, you know, again, I mean, we'll see how the next, you know, year or two and certainly 4 years unfold, but you know, it's certainly there.
It is. I would add, though, and this is the... This is the thing that I find the most interesting, frankly, but it is, we have such a good start on this, and it is about being able to sustain it, but it is one of those things, too, that always needs a lot of work. It'll never be done, if you know what I mean. So, you know, we have this great start in terms of pulling people back into the political process and giving them a sense of what the vision can be if we all work together, but it is a continual process where we need more and more people to engage. The more people that engage, the better. And even if it's around one specific issue, that's okay. But we need people to engage to continue to create a sustainable political community that really benefits the whole state of Colorado.
Yeah. And I'm curious, will you and the two of you, Greg and Sheila, will you be contributing to some of these ongoing efforts to build this continuity, or how?
Sure, absolutely. We'll we will be helpful in building that and continuing the process.
So the campaign manager roles that that you two are doing just didn't end with the election.
No, I mean, we live in the state, and we're committed to the political process into the state, and we will certainly be around and continue to try to make it better.
Yeah. Well, you've got something that you can both feel very proud of, and I'm excited to help get the word out there so that more people can understand that there is a way to be involved in a political process that builds strong coalitions of people from different parties, that it's about really rallying for building a strong community in different parts of the state. Or I know this is way premature, but just the way this thing was pulled off and the yearning in our country for strong leadership, I couldn't help but be tempted to think of someone like Bill Ritter running our country.
Well,
forgive me.
Let's let him get inaugurated first.
Yes,
to the governor's office here in Colorado.
Thank you. Getting a little carried away there.
No.
so glad to be in Colorado to enjoy that, and my listeners in many different places. I just want to thank you for tuning in and encourage you to stay tuned and learn more, because more information will be coming out about this. And if I'm understanding correctly, are you too willing to help support other candidates to learn about how you did this so that we can strengthen the entire political process?
Absolutely. We would love that.
And is the best way to contact you, do you think, through email or what?
Email would probably be best.
Okay. That gives you a chance in the midst of preparing for an inauguration and cleaning up from a very active campaign to be able to address those things. And if it's okay, would you go ahead and share email addresses?
Sure. My email address can be reached at Greg, G-R-E-G, at RitterForGovernor.com.
And that's spelled?
R-I-T-T-E-R-F-O-R, Governor.com.
Okay. Perfect. Greg at RitterForGovernor.com. And,
yep.
And Sheila, how about you?
You can reach me at, I'm going to spell it out for you, excelsmac@AOL.com. So it's excelsmac@AOL.com.
Okay. Perfect. Oh, well, thank you so much. It's just been a delight to having you share some of the details that are inspiring to me, and I know so many others. And I wish you well, and I know that I will continue. You've inspired me to be more active than I've been in years, and I want to see that for a lot of others. So I'll be in touch with you soon to continue to contribute to what you're doing, and feel privileged to have you helping to get the word out there to my listeners. So thank you so much.
Well, thank you,
and thanks for the opportunity to be a part of the show.
My pleasure. I'll talk with you soon.
Okay.
Thank you.
You just have a wonderful week until we meet again for more Advanced Living. I say God bless you all, and keep your faith and stay strong. Goodbye for now.
Let go and let God, let myself do.
You can Thank you.